Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Primetime with Isaac and Souk.
Son, your ego is writing checks your body can't cash.
Isaac Rupp.
You've been busted. You lost your qualifications as section leader 3 times.
Jason Sukanik.
You're lucky to be here. Your family name ain't the best in the Navy. I'd like to bust your butt, but I can't. I got another problem here.
Primetime with Isaac and Souk. This sounds very serious. They are not.
I gotta give you your dream shot. I'm gonna send you up against the best. You two characters are going to...
Primetime on the Fan Sports Network, 105.1 and 1080.
You guys are number one.
The Fan.
Hey, what it do?
Oh,
what's up?
Was,
good weekend.
That was pulled to me there and forgot to turn on your mic.
Well, I thought I hit it and I didn't. So
misfire.
I had to do a double take.
Yeah, it
or
happens
a,
sometimes.
I had to take two.
Yeah.
But here we are. Yeah. How's everybody's weekend? How's everybody? How's
that's
everybody
a great
doing?
Sports weekend right there.
Doing
boys.
Great. Boy, it lived
was,
up.
That lived up.
We didn't
know if it was going to. And
thank
for
you.
And for a moment, it didn't. But then the ones that looked like they were going to be laughers and letdowns came roaring back to give us what we wanted.
Yeah, it wasn't good until about 7 o'clock Saturday night.
Yeah.
And once we got to about 7 o'clock Saturday night, things got wild.
Yep.
Because we had the Ducks, Penn State actually getting good.
Mm-hmm.
Sunday, we had the Ryder Cup charge
yeah.
from the prideful Americans.
There was and that was one where I
we
told
had
myself.
The Vikings and Steelers in the morning.
I was not going to get, I didn't want to get false hope. But when the doucher came back and halved his, I had a brief moment where I was like, I even had a buddy text me and was like, fingers crossed, like, chance? And I was like, it's maybe. Like, there was a brief window there where, like, oh, my God, is this going to happen? And then, no.
Well, they came really close, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a lot of red on that board.
Yep.
And when Justin Thomas hit that putt to win his match,
yep.
Uncle Mo, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Stranger things have happened.
Mo tilts fields and courses, and he was big
yeah.
fat ass was certainly leaning towards the U.S.
I mean, it's shocking. So they showed the graph that, or the whatever the stat,
yeah,
that the biggest comeback in Ryder Cup history on Sunday, singles day,
four, right?
Was four. Yeah. Deficit was four.
Yeah.
This U.S. team was down 7.
Yeah.
So they got into a scenario that, I mean, not only had it never been done, it's just like, it's like being down 55-0
yeah.
in a football game.
Yep.
Maybe not that. Maybe 42-0.
I mean, 28-3 in the Super Bowl in the second half. I mean, it's like that. That would have been
yeah.
would have been a Patriots comeback.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because it's, I mean, I guess it's reachable, but I don't think anybody thought it was reachable, but they sure made it seem reachable.
Well, even, again.
Towards the end.
Even DeChambeau, when he was done, said, look, he goes, I know what this is. He's like, I know this is a long shot, but he's like, we got a shot. And the they were saying on the broadcast, who was it, who was doing the color?
Well, Nick Faldo.
Nick Faldo.
It was great to hear him again.
Yeah. And he was even saying, who's been in these, he goes, dude, he goes, you could feel all the pressure on the U.S. team those first 2 days and putts weren't being made. And he goes, this is the exact opposite. And he's like, dude, confidence is a real thing. And you could, it was the inverse. Every putt that the Europeans made in those first couple of days were being made by the U.S. team. And it felt like there was a real charge coming. And then Shane Lowry said, not up in here.
I mean, there was a real charge.
Yeah.
Dude, okay, so Buckley, here's a fun fact. Buckley and I, by the way, welcome back. Ryan Buckley,
hey!
Everybody.
Hello.
There is a video circulating of Ryan Buckley dancing a wonderful jig.
Yeah.
After hitting a, what was that, an 8-iron?
Striping a 9-iron, yeah.
A 9-iron out at Sun River. Yeah. He had a quality weekend. He was feeling himself.
Oh, yeah.
But we bet on Team Europe, as you know. You gave me crap for that.
Cowards.
Yeah.
But there came a point.
It was a sweat.
Yes.
It was a big time sweat.
We had to sweat that because there's two different bets. Remember, for the European team to retain the Ryder Cup, they only had to get 14 points.
Yeah.
Okay? To hoist the Ryder Cup, they had to, this is in betting terms, they had to get 14 and a half points.
Okay.
And those are two different bets. The just to get the 14 points was like plus 110, and then to hoist the trophy was like plus 160.
Yeah, I got plus 170.
Yeah, and so I bet plus 160 thinking, well, I think Europe's going to kick their ass. Okay, well, we get down to the Shane Lowry match, and he has that match, or did he win that match? Did he have that match?
Yeah.
He got him a half point, got him to 14.
14.
A lot of us were still sitting there going, we need another half.
And if the Euros don't get a free half point for Victor Hovland sitting out in his match, oh boy.
Yeah. Boy, it was.
Dude, it was wild.
It was something else. And it, honestly, it was the same kind of feeling like when I was watching the Oregon-Penn State game. I did not believe that Penn State was that good. I said before, I've been saying for 3 years that Drew Aller was ass. And through three quarters, I was sitting there smugly being like, and welcome to the Drew Aller experience. Although, never go full Drew Aller. But he went full Drew Aller in that he was ass, gave you a brief moment, and then was like, nah, this is really me. But I sat there, when they showed Lanning doing the, what turned out in hindsight to be the 1,000 cuts.
Right.
It certainly looked like everybody doing that, that was the throat slash.
Like it's the Vince Carter dunk contest, it's over. Boy, it's over.
And when that thing went to overtime, I was like, dude, because already Twitter was like, dude, you are about to live in infamy in one of the all-time great blunders of calling game, and then, oops. And I was just sitting there being like, how? That was the same feeling I had watching the Europeans. I'm like, there's no way. There's no way the Europeans are going to blow this. I sat there and was like, Oregon's going to blow this away? Like, you're going to choke this away and have your coach be a meme from now until eternity, and then it was like, you could take a deep breath again and be like, all right.
Yeah, to be misconstrued there and then never live that down. No. Oh, my God.
And it wouldn't matter that he told his team, he talked to the broadcasters and did the
I didn't mean it like that.
It didn't matter. He was that close. He was that close from that thing being, that would have been his defining moment. And that was terrible because Oregon was better than they were. And yet, just like Europe was better than the U.S., and yet there was a moment there where your pucker factor was about a 13.
Yeah, back to the Ryder Cup. No, I'm just kidding.
Did you see him doing the zombie thing with Rory?
Who? Oh,
you haven't
wait,
seen
who?
The Europeans.
No.
So after it was done, the Europeans were on the bus, just shit, you know. Oh, sorry.
Oh.
Sorry.
Hey, now.
Yep.
We'll go ahead and dump that.
Dump that. Sorry. My bad.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I was going to say S house drunk, and it slipped out.
All right.
They were just
woo, I'm embarrassed. No, I'm flush. My cheeks are flush.
Oh, well, I'm fine.
It's so embarrassing.
S house drunk, right?
Yeah.
And they're on the bus.
I get it.
And Rory's got the trophy, and they're singing the old, it's an Irish song, you know, Zombie. Zombie.
The Cranberries?
Cranberries.
They're singing the Cranberries?
Okay, so there's references. It used to be, there was a previous Ryder Cup where the U.S. fans taunted and trolled Rory by saying, we're in your head, we're in your head.
In your head.
Rory, Rory, Rory. But so now they're saying Rory's in your head. Yeah. He's in your head.
He's
Rory,
your
Rory,
head.
Rory.
And Rory's got the cup and they're all drunk.
Well, I tell you what.
It was
That's pretty good.
That was good.
That's pretty good.
It was some great age.
Well,
trolling.
Europe has some really good trolls.
Yeah.
And trolling.
Yeah.
The US does not. The US is just vulgar and childish and crude.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And crosses a line.
Yeah.
Whereas the Europeans are a little bit more creative about it.
Yeah.
But at any rate, the strokes gained at the Ryder Cup, by the time they got to Sunday, strokes gained, which is just an analytic of how everyone's playing compared to the average player, was dead even.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah, it was dead even. And U.S. is getting smoked. But why were they getting smoked? It's because of putting.
Putting.
And the Europeans had like 7 of the top 8 putters in the field. Like they were making everything and the U.S. was making nothing.
The amount of times I was watching that thing that It was like one after another, and they were makeable putts. And it was like, well, inch to the right, inch to the left. And you just sat there and like, dude, this thing is done. If anyone should have been throat slashing and dunzo, it was the Europeans, because God, the U.S. team couldn't make a freaking putt.
Yeah, and Europe made everything.
Yeah.
And that evened out on Sunday. Yeah. So it was actually a lot closer
than you would
think, than it looked, other than putts. Other than putting. And of course, that gets into a whole thing of why they created a putting contest out of that golf course anyway, which, I mean, we don't need to get into. We've got other stuff to cover today, more important stuff. But the U.S. set up Bethpage Black, one of the toughest courses in America. Mm-hmm. They made it easy. Yeah. And so they turned it into a putting contest, which actually completely hurt their team because the Europeans are better putters. Yeah. Why did they do that?
There was, I mean, they're just, everyone was out there, you know, being able to score. I mean, it was made for exciting golf, by the way. I mean, people were pin hunting on that thing no matter what. And you're right, it turned into a putting contest. And for, you know, 90% of the time, it was the Europeans that were dominating it. And by the way, like, I was full USA. I, unlike you cowards, did not bet against my homeland. Although,
hey, should have. We're a little richer today.
Well, I do have. I am a dual citizen of the fine country of Sweden as well. Yeah. So my man,
and you have
Ober,
a Swede on the team.
I do have a Swede on the team.
Your boy Ober, he came up big.
He came up huge. I will say, I hate. I think we have a drop there that of what I feel of the ugly American. I hate it.
Yeah, it's bad.
It's
you know,
the dumb, ignorant, fat, bald. This,
fat, uneducated beer.
I said this years ago that it drove me crazy. This was like 10 years ago. We talked about this. I was at a country show where this fat idiot went on stage, shirtless, waving his American flag and his cutoff jorts and headband, and everyone goes nuts. I hate that that has become the symbol of who we are. It's an embarrassment. We're like, we're proud of being dumb and ignorant. And the behavior out on that golf course made me embarrassed for our country.
It was bad.
And so when Lowry hit that putt, and there was part of me that was like, you know what? Good for them. Good for them for taking all of our just ignorance and stupidity and all the crap we were spewing and shoving it straight, you know where. Well, that's such a bad look.
Outside of them wearing, them being from other countries, they're much more likable than we are in pretty much all phases. Fans, players, you know, level of class, all of it. Yeah. That said, you know, we just have something in us where we root American.
Yeah.
You know, got to root for the flag. Got to root for the stars and stripes. Now, I'm gonna put a pin in this one because I feel like with everything that went down there regarding crowd behavior, we will do a couple segments on that. There's a lot of stuff that happened there that people maybe didn't even see.
Yeah.
And it really was a very, very, very bad look for the U.S., which is maybe, you know, maybe it's just a microcosm of how we look to the world right now. Yeah, unfortunately, it's all the same.
I hated it.
But I think, who didn't?
Well, I think a lot of people out of Bethpage, because they were the ones doing it.
Yeah. There's a lot of douchebags.
Well, then you get into the whole argument of is 1% spoiling it for the other 99 who aren't that way?
And... Yeah, I think a lot of people see it the way we see it. Yeah. That said, we weren't there. No. They were, and they took center stage. So we will. I have a whole list of things that occurred that were pretty classless. Yeah. Not pretty, very classless and childish. Yeah. And we will get to that, and we will talk. We'll have a couple segments on crowd behavior at sporting events coming up. I don't know if we'll get to it today.
It's a
Monday.
There's a lot to get to.
There's a lot to get to. Paul Feinbaum's running for Senate. I mean, we've buried the lead.
Can we get to Dan Lanning in The Shining?
Yeah. I mean, dude.
Dude, that's...
Let's start... Okay.
That's top five moment. I've been doing this for 20 plus years. Top five moment is seeing Dan Lanning's face in the post game after that Penn State game. That was full on... All work and no play make Jack or Dan a very dull boy. He's coming to kill someone.
So we'll start there. Penn State, Oregon. I mean, was it a thriller? It ended up being a thriller.
It ended up.
But a good little Big Ten ball game. We'll start with that when we return here on 105.1 The Fan. You know, I was thinking when you first told me about that, because I hadn't seen.
Yeah, that was on the bus, like leaving the course.
Yeah, I hadn't seen any of that. But I was thinking, you know, that's kind of a weird song to sing in a celebratory mood, in a jovial mood.
Yeah, because it's a war song.
That said, now having Buck having played it and bumped back with it, That is such a great sing-along song.
Yeah.
Like such a great, maybe a great karaoke song.
It's kind of anthem-y almost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love the Cranberries.
Well, it's always fun. It's a little like Born in the USA is a protest song, but it's played at like, it's
pro-America rallies.
It's pro-America rallies, and it's not really a very pro-USA song. And that's that song, Zombies, it's a protest song. But when put in, you know, some fun terms,
it can be used.
It can be used however you want.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah,
I just tuned into the MLB app to queue up some Hardball, and then I remembered. Oh wait, we don't have Hardball tonight.
No, we do not. And for some of our teams, all of our teams, there is no more.
See you next season.
It's all gone.
They're all on a beach in Mexico somewhere together.
That was I'm not gonna lie. While it was a great sport weekend, it was not. There was a moment there where I was not in a great spot.
Well, yeah. I mean, your team blew it. We'll have a segment on that later. Yeah,
can't beat the Marlins.
Well, they did once.
Two of three.
Yeah, got them once.
Two of three. And the Reds even did their part by losing, and we were like, nah, we don't want it.
Can we give Major League Baseball, before we get to Oregon-Penn State, some credit for only making us live one night without baseball before cranking up the postseason?
Thank God.
Right? Yes, you know what I mean? And no.
Yes.
What do you mean no?
I'd like to give them a modicum of crap here, too, because they're starting their first playoff game at 10 o'clock on a Tuesday. A.M.,
yeah,
that
but
is.
See, I like that.
I don't mind
day baseball.
1 p.m. local on a Tuesday for your fans? That sucks.
Well, that does, but I think if you don't want the postseason to last to December,
yeah,
and you're going to have games like that. There's too many games,
and
too many teams.
Stagger them. We have too many games of college football every weekend, and no one has a problem putting them all on Saturday.
I may be weird. I love when you give me a nice day of baseball game.
I do too.
Again, these are not. This is not the World Series.
No.
I love that we do this. I'm anti that. I'm all about it. Let's go.
Yeah.
Well, the Ducks win a thriller, a Big Ten thriller.
Yes.
They beat Penn State. If you didn't see it.
Didn't look like it was going to be a thriller for three quarters. It looked like it was going to be a good old-fashioned rock fight, and then a football game broke out.
Yeah. Wow. Where to even start?
Yeah.
And I'm not real sure, other than, can you break it down to quarterback play?
Well,
I mean, Dante Moore played great.
Yeah.
And Drew Aller, while he had his moments, did not.
No.
He Drew Allered. Well, and I got the sense, just from watching, so right at the end there, when Drew Aller threw the pick, of course, he had scared face.
Mm-hmm.
And James Franklin came over to him. And boy, that was pretty icy.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
Oh, yeah.
That was, I thought, telling. Because I think if Dante Moore had done that, Dan Lanning
loves
is over there hugging him.
Yeah.
But James Franklin just tapped him on the shoulder pads and said, head up.
Yep.
And walked off. And that kind of led me down a road. My mind started wandering, and I just think, after watching that game, because I haven't watched a ton of Penn State. I know Drew Aller. We've talked about Drew Aller. We talked about with him and Joey last week, and nobody's a real fan of him, and he's got all these immeasurables and immense talent, but he just hasn't put it all together in college. And you just get the sense, just from watching that game, yep, they just don't trust him.
No.
And that's why, when we go back to Kotelniki's play calling or why their offense stalls, I think it's just because they cannot trust Drew Aller. And when they had to trust Drew Aller, because they had no other choice, they were down 14 points, he was able to make a couple of plays, at least one big throw.
Yeah.
But then in the end, when you need Drew Aller, he's going to let you down. And he's done that both times against Oregon.
This is why I call it the Drew Aller experience. Remember when they did, remember the old Michael Vick experience Nike commercial? Do you remember that?
No.
Yeah, the where they made it almost like you hopped in a roller coaster,
yeah,
and you're spinning around.
It's one of my favorite.
Yeah.
Go on YouTube and look it up. It's one of my favorite Nike commercials
really
of all
good
time. And it's just, it's like, you know those suspension roller coaster rides? And it's that. They put you in a chair and they suspend you, and then you're in the middle of the football field, and this thing just takes you through like the most amazing, like you're spinning around and you're dodging everybody, and you basically dodge an entire team and go on like on an 80-yard football or 80-yard touchdown run. And then it's like the Michael Vick experience. The Drew Aller experience is three quarters of you getting punched in the nerds and being like, dude, what are we doing? And then like they feed you your favorite dessert, like a big delicious apple pie, and you're like, and then like an ice bag for your nuggets. And you're like, oh, this feels wonderful. And then right when you're thinking that the ride's over and like, oh, this is a nice way, they take the pie and they mash it in your face. And you're right in that they never trust him. They do this against, they do it in Ohio State. They do it in so many big games where they play the most conservative game plan known to man. They couldn't run on Oregon. Oregon knew they couldn't run on him. And still they tried nothing until they got down by two scores and were like, well, at this point, we can't do anything else, so we might as well start taking some shots down the field. And if he screws it up, he screws it up. And lo and behold, you get the comeback. Penn State's defense played their ass off. And then ultimately, you get to overtime, and he makes a throw that, yes, the reason why you went out and got arguably the best safety in the country this side of Caleb Downs, I mean, when people don't know because he was at Purdue, but Thieneman was literally an All-American at Purdue. The dude is an NFL first day draft pick. He's phenomenal, and he made a great play. Go back and watch that. Why Drew Aller even attempts that throw? He's throwing into bracket coverage. You see this a lot, like in the NFL, when you see like the cover two, where there's this high safety and the corner turns the guy loose. They call it like the hole shot, like a honey hole, right? And normally you've got about a 10 to 15 yard window. You can throw it in there because it's usually a ball deeper downfield. This is a condensed field with Thieneman playing the robber, come and sprint it over. And he tried to feather it over two guys, like into like a 5 yard window. Like, you just can't make that throw. And yet, there we are trying to make that throw in overtime. And I think that's why Penn State at times plays the most conservative offense in the world.
Yeah.
And yet we still have to listen to somehow, because he's a 3-year starter, that this guy's like a big time quarterback. And he just isn't. I don't want to like kill the kid.
It feels like he's almost enough. Like he evades pressure and he stays up and he's close to making the throws, but he just isn't there.
Can I also offer a counterpoint? And I really want to be careful not turning this into a Drew Aller show.
Yeah.
I mean, the Ducks won a huge game, and there's a lot to talk about on their side, and we'll get to all of that. But I think he is an interesting guy. Is there a case to be made that Penn State has done him a disservice by not trusting him, by playing this way, right? Because if you've had this is his third year starting there?
Yes. Third full year.
Yeah, so he's had two full seasons starting there, and this is, you know, he's almost halfway to his third season. If you had unleashed him and lived with some of his mistakes for a couple of years, perhaps he's much better now.
Perhaps.
But it's almost like he's been shackled, and then when you unshackle him, when you have to, because you have no other choice, it turns out bad, and then you wonder why. Well, maybe it's because you've kept him in shackles. So I don't know.
But the difference in this game to me, because it ended up obviously being by the narrowest of margins. And look, there's lots of ways, and look, you can break down this game a million different ways, I'm sure we'll do a bunch of them. But yes, to me, the difference in these two teams, even though I just think Oregon's better than Penn State, I thought they were better going in. I think if they play on a neutral field, I think Oregon wins 8 of those. I thought Penn State was very fortunate to be in the game. But yes, Dante Moore versus Drew Aller. At the most important position, if you watch those two guys play and think that they are in the same tier, you're fooling yourself. Dante Moore, there's a chance Dante Moore is the number one overall pick next year, that he could be a 1-year starter in college and he's done. There's a reason why Drew Aller is on his fourth year of college and is not going to be a first round pick. And in that game, I thought it spoke volumes when push came to shove, the plays that Dante Moore can make versus the plays that Drew Aller is doing and the confidence they have.
Oh, yeah.
And yes, that was a giant difference in that game, was
very big
Moore versus Aller.
Well, Moore, I was most impressed with his poise. We haven't seen a whole lot of him outside of UCLA or a couple cupcakes for Oregon, right? So we were kind of wondering how would he handle this. And dude, that environment is freaking nuts. It's awesome. I loved it. I'm sure that was so much fun to play in. But that can rattle even the best of them, and it did not with him. And you know, he just kept. He made. It really does come down to that. Drew Aller did. He made 2 less plays. Dante Moore made 3 more plays, and that really was it.
Yep.
Because it was 4th-and-1 with Penn State up 7 in overtime, and if Dante.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Tay Moore doesn't skid across for a first down. I think it was him. They ran the quarterback keeper.
Yep.
This game's over, and we're not talking. I think we're talking the same about Oregon and whether they won or lost the game, but they don't win the game. So, again, back to coaching, you know, if Drew Aller's been shackled, isn't Dante Moore a case in point that raw talent needs coaching and a little experience?
Absolutely.
Because look at him. He is the best example of the quality of the coaching of the Oregon staff. They saw it in him, and I'd probably speak for some Duck fans who saw when they signed Dante Moore back then, was like, ooh, really? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I get the, you know, raw ability, but boy, he didn't do much at UCLA, you know, and is that really the best guy? But they saw it, and they are showing that when a guy not only has the talent, but then he gets some experience, grows up a little bit, and then, oh, by the way, is coached the way the Will Steins and the Dan Lannings are coaching him, that's the difference between Dante Moore and Drew Aller out there because they're both extremely talented.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. Moore, his poise was what I took away from that game more than anything else.
Yeah.
That guy's a baller. Yeah. And we talked about this on Friday. He was plus 4,000 to be the number one pick in the NBA in the NFL draft
and
next
the
year.
NBA draft, too.
And the NBA.
Like a Charlie Ward sort of situation.
He is now at 2,500.
Yeah.
Which is still, yeah. I mean,
there's not
it's a, still a long
it's,
shot.
It's not a bad bet.
But really Mendoza is the favorite to be
which,
the number one
which,
pick.
By although, the way, we get to see an Otson in 2 weeks.
Yeah, you get to see Moore versus Mendoza.
Yeah.
But the Titans are looking more and more like they're going to have the number one pick.
And they're happy with Cam Ward.
Right.
He's
are
the
they
one
gonna,
thing they have.
And they're probably not going to take a quarterback. So I don't know. Yeah. Anyway.
They'll trade down.
Dante Moore was fantastic, and he really did make, I mean, he just made a couple key plays that allowed Oregon to win that game.
Even the last touchdown was that Gary Bryant Jr. that had it, I think, the ended up being the game-winning score. He's under pressure, sidesteps it, eludes the free rusher, and sidearms the ball and
that's what I mean.
And go to the house.
He made several of those plays.
He was great.
And those were off script plays. You know,
we had not seen him really pressured, and he didn't get sacked, but he was under pressure plenty of times, had to move around, and we wanted to see what would happen when push came to shove, and he actually had to extend plays and make them. And you know, it wasn't perfect. It's not going to be. Penn State is a really good defensive football team, and they did a great job of containing Oregon's offense for four quarters, and then eventually just wore down because their offense was doing nothing. But make no mistake, Dante Moore, like, those were like little body blows. And it was funny. That's what when Lanning came out and said it was a game of 1,000 cuts, I was sitting there, and I may have even, I think I tweeted at one point, I said, this reminds me of a heavyweight fight where you can't really do a lot of damage, and you're just hitting them in the body. And you're just going body blow, body blow, body blow. And then when you get into the championship rounds, all of a sudden the hands start to come down, the gas is out, and I said, Oregon's going to knock them out. These body blows, because one side was grinding. And it felt like Oregon, they weren't necessarily grinding. It's just that Penn State was making one play to get off the field. Oregon was one fingernail short, one shoestring tackle short. And everything Penn State did was a grind. And you saw Penn State's defenders huffing and hands on hips. And I was like, the dam is going to burst on this. And that's was kind of was Lanning's point was the 1,000 cuts. It's just that we didn't see Penn State getting that jolt, because when they got the big touchdown, that place came alive. That place was dead quiet for like 2+ quarters.
He said in the post game that, you know, that home field advantage is usually worth about 7 points, and that really didn't feel that way tonight.
No, but when they got the big touchdown over the top, and all of a sudden you were like, oh, and that was to Ross. They got the big TD. You were like, oh God, like all of a sudden the crowd started picking up. I'm like, dude, we got a ball game here, and they came to life. But before that, I thought Oregon just really was delivering body blows, and that would pay dividends, and ultimately it did.
Well, Penn State was too.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought Oregon's defense towards the end, even though they made the big play in overtime, they were
getting worn down.
I mean, three straight drives where they gave up touchdowns.
Yep.
I mean, Of course, the last one's just 25 yards, but still, I mean, they did not, and they were getting kind of gashed towards the end. Yeah. So it's like,
well, and finally, I thought Penn State actually got creative and they were starting to use some of the jet motion and trying to get some angles on blocks. But that was the other one is I've always said teams will tell you what they think of the other side by their game plan. And I promise you, Penn State thought that they could line up and knock Oregon off the ball and ram it down their throat. And I couldn't believe that it took them three quarters to realize that you couldn't do that. The other group, if Dante Moore gets my game ball for, you know, number one, my second game ball goes to the entire defensive line. I thought that defensive line, which was a question mark for me coming in, I thought they played phenomenally. And that is a really good physical Penn State team. And Oregon's defensive line, and when's the last time you said that? Like an Oregon D-line, everyone, you know, talks about the Oregon offense. But, dude, this D-line was a Big Ten bully. That was an Ohio State type of effort where they just smack you. You're like, you're not going to run against us.
And that was the thing, is it felt like they made Aller uncomfortable all day, but they also plugged the run against two of the country's best running backs.
So impressed.
All right, let's continue to talk about the Ducks' big win in Happy Valley. We will do that coming up next. But first, Buck with SportsCenter. Well, Dan Lanning called it the best game he's ever been a part of, which is interesting.
Yeah. He's won a national title at Georgia and Big Ten title game and that game last year at Ohio State.
Yeah.
But, dude, you could tell afterwards, dude, this one meant, and I don't know exactly what it was.
I know what it was.
About this one, but yeah, I'm interested in your take. But yeah, that was not another big game for him. That one meant something.
Well, I think we snuffed it out on Friday when we had him on. And it was that I just think that guy showed that he was tired of hearing about how good Penn State was.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was the narratives were overly, oh, what a place. I mean, this is different. Oh, this team, top five. You know, I think he just got tired. Dude, you know, that guy is going to find a way to motivate
himself. He's got the Jordan thing. I took that personally.
For any game. There is. Okay. Yeah. He's going to find an angle.
Yeah.
That was his angle.
Yeah.
And you could hear it in his voice. He kept saying it. He's like, you know, like, did you guys know Penn State? He even said it to us. He goes, did you guys know Penn State was pretty good? Almost mocking the fact that he hears it all the time.
Yeah.
And he said, you know what? We're pretty good too.
Yeah.
So I think for him to get that win, you know, and that is an uber competitive gentleman right there. Yeah. You saw it on his face in the post game.
That's my favorite Dan Lanning moment ever. And I want someone to take his face and then put it in the door frame of Jack Nicholson from The Shining.
Yeah, I bet AI could help us with that.
And that should, because, you know, they're always doing Oregon shirts.
Yeah.
That should be an Oregon shirt.
Here's Danny.
Here's Danny. That's not, you know, and like you could make the Penn State, you know, put the Penn State logo on the door as it's being broken through.
Well, you're talking about like the faces he's making before in his immediate postgame interview. Did you guys see the video circulating from like someone running around with a cell phone on the field of his like primal scream before that interview started? Did you see that?
Haven't seen it.
This is the isolated audio of it. You'll hear crowd noise and then you will hear Dan. That's before he goes on with Catherine Tappan, right before his interview.
Dude,
that's
fired up.
That's the Full Metal Jacket. Let me see your war face, sir. Your war face. Ah, that's the war face.
That's what people love about him.
Yes.
I mean.
Well, I was saying earlier, like, if you want to win a national championship, and I mean this in the best possible way, right? If you want to win.
Here comes the backhanded compliment.
It is not a backhanded compliment. Some people may not view it as a comment. I view it is. If you want to win a national title, find a psycho. Find a psychopath to be your coach. Because find me the last rational, normal, like even-keeled guy to win national championship. It doesn't. Kirby Smart's a psycho. Nick Saban is a psycho.
Jim Harbaugh, psycho.
Jim Harbaugh, psycho. Dabo, he's a psycho. He's just a religious psycho. You're telling me that Dabo doesn't run a cult somewhere?
They're all psychos.
Dude, that dude is a psycho. Find me a psycho. I'm sorry, but nice, calm, rational, just like Chris Peterson was like a great coach. You know, Kyle Whittingham is a great guy. They're not psychos, and they don't win national championships.
Yeah, Mike Bellotti won a lot of games, but not a psycho.
I want a psychopath. I want a psychopath in the living room that's recruiting for me. I want a psychopath giving me my pregame speech. I want a psychopath raising money in NIL. Kids respond to psychopaths. And that's the difference in the game.
Can we mark that, please?
Yeah.
Thank you. Kids respond to psychopaths?
Yes.
I think a nice clean edit is justified there.
James Franklin seems, again, like a pretty, like somewhat like normal, like kind of even keeled guy. You can get a little like you speak in Japanese, but for the most part,
you're speaking Japanese.
You know, Franklin's not a super, he's not a super excitable guy. He just, he's out there and it's like, I did do my thing and I got a nice program and I win a lot of games.
I don't know what you're talking about.
He's not a psycho. I want a psychopath to win. I want my coach after the whiteout doing that. And then we're going to go to Penn State. And then we're going to go to Ohio State. Yeah. And then we're going to win a national title.
Remember when Howard Dean got disqualified for that?
Well, we're
Isn't
not
that funny now?
We're not running for presidencies. We're not running for president of college football trying to win a national title.
James Franklin now 15-29 against ranked teams, 4-21 against the top 10, and 1-18 against top 10 opponents that are in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
It's just,
it's unbelievable.
I think even he said it after the game. He said it's no longer a narrative. He said it's just the truth. And I was, when he said that, I was like, oh, whoa, man, that's just like
that's sad.
I felt bad. I honestly, I felt bad because like someone asked him and he was just like, well, it's not a narrative. He goes, it's just, you know, it's truth. And so it's the record. And you're like, oh my God.
At least he's owning it.
Yeah, thanks, James. Sorry about that. Yeah, they don't win these games. They don't.
Were fans chanting Fire Franklin? Did I read that?
Yes. And unfortunately too, and I am not my stance on Drew Aller has been clear for 3+ years. They were, Dusty has it's brutal. As the fans are filing out of the stadium, dude, there are thousands that are doing the F Drew Aller. And I mean, it's raining down. And this goes back to the Ryder Cup thing. You can be upset, you can be unhappy that you lost, you can be upset at play calls, all that stuff, but to turn it into this personal, that's a step too far, especially when it's for your own fans. I don't like that.
So when we come back, we can get to a few of your texts on this, and you know, it's interesting, a couple of you have brought up a guy who you are comparing to Drew Aller. Yeah. And I think that's interesting. College Drew Aller.
Yeah.
Well, of course, there isn't an NFL Drew Aller yet.
No.
But there's an NFL version of this guy, and it looked very different, he does in the NFL than he did in college. And we'll get to that and more of your texts next on The Fan. All right, how do we feel about the new big soup drop?
Kids respond to psychopaths. Doesn't everybody?
You know, look, it is hard to poke holes in that argument.
Yeah.
That the college football, find you a psycho if you want to win a championship.
Kids respond to psychopaths.
Now, Dusty was just in here. He brought up Ryan Day.
Is he
a psychopath?
Only for dying that beard.
Well,
I don't know if he is that type.
I can't say what he really, he's a different level of, he is so weirdly quiet and stoic, and he's got his own situation going on in there, but he is. That's an inward
but
sort of thing.
But there are always exceptions to rules. So
that's true.
We'll maybe call him that. Because, dude, I went back and I just was going down the list of, I got to find one in here. And I'm like,
there's psychopaths.
Ogeron? I mean, he's a psycho, right?
Absolutely. So you can't understand it, but he's a psychopath. Like, I wanted...
Go Tigers!
I wanted to believe that, like, more calm and measured people were coming into the game. They're not.
No.
It's
just a different archetype.
It's a different archetype. Now you have to be a little more player friendly and all that. But, yes, it is just – you benefit from kind of that obsessive personality, which is why I said, like, if I was hiring a coach, I would find someone that's a little makes me a little uncomfortable at
times. I'm going to get to the text line, and we're talking about Drew Aller, and – it just seems pretty obvious that the coaching staff there doesn't trust him.
No.
And that could be a lot of, that could be the root of a lot of the problems.
Yeah.
But then when they get down 14 points, I mean, you kind of have to trust them.
Yes,
and then
you have no choice.
Lo and behold, look what happens.
Yeah.
So I brought up the point that it's perhaps not been good for Drew Aller that he's been shackled for 3 years because they don't trust him. And then when they do unleash him, like we had to see him unleash it in the Big Ten title game last year because they were down 18 or whatever, there was some pretty good Drew Aller in there.
Yeah.
But of course, then the bad Drew Aller comes out, and that's why they're scared of him, because he throws the picks.
Exactly, because it's the full Drew Aller. Never go full Drew Aller.
But my point is why not live, like if you hadn't shackled him for 2 years, perhaps all of that would be out of his system and he'd be a better decision maker regarding those things in his senior year. That's your job as a coach. Now, the text line has brought up another guy, which I want your opinion on, because it's interesting. They are saying that Drew Aller has a few Justin Herbert vibes, where Herbert had his shackles,
yeah,
Well, I mean, yeah. Cristobal did shackle Herbert.
100%.
And there were a lot. I remember talking about it. We were doing a show at the time saying, what is going on with freaking Cristobal? This guy's got a arm. Yeah. His receivers weren't doing him any favors. A lot of drops. Cristobal is just a more conservative run first coach.
Yes.
Well, they still won the Rose Bowl. I mean, Justin Herbert had success in college. Yep. And they won the Rose Bowl. So this, and again, Penn State will be back. This is not the death
blow to Penn State. You may see both of these teams again, much like you saw with Oregon and Penn State. I mean, they were one play away.
Well, you brought up a point earlier that I wanted to get back to, and I'll just toss it out now, that you know, last year when Oregon beat Ohio State, we came back the next day, and you said something very similar then that you said today, and that is, I can't believe Jim Knowles played Oregon that way.
Yeah.
Well, they saw Jim Knowles again, and he didn't play him that way. Penn State, the same thing you just said. I can't believe Penn State thought they could just line up and pound it down Oregon's throat. Well, if they play again, they probably won't play it that way.
No.
So, you know,
they may see it.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Nobody trusts Penn State or Drew Aller, but be careful.
Yes.
That was a really good game, and they had you on the ropes.
Yep.
So, and you also had them on the ropes, but they had you up 7 with fourth down in overtime. My point is, with Herbert, there are some similarities there in that you got a quarterback who, if you just let him cook a little bit in college, you'd have a better product by the time he's a senior.
This is the only thing I'll say is having watched him over the and I've pointed out his stats in big games over his 3 years. They're brutal.
I mean,
Drew Aller.
Oh, Aller.
It's awful. But even watching the first, I'll find it. Someone even put together a highlight clip over it. The first three games, he makes just inexcusable like throws. And you saw there were some guys open at the beginning of that game. He just doesn't throw an accurate ball. And he gets really skittish. And so I think it's hard for coaches to have faith when you don't do simple things. Like that's like saying if you don't do division and subtraction well, how do you trust someone to go and do calculus? And I think that's at times the problem. I honestly think Penn State's best quarterback is playing at Missouri right now. And I think they'd be better off if Bo Brebeula was still there. But, you know, I guess that's a... I mean, they're there from day to day. They see him. I mean, he's been the starter for 3 years at a top 10 program. So to sit there and tear him apart, that's not fair. They were in the College Football Playoff last year and won a game. I just know that when I watch other big games, very rarely do I think that Penn State has an advantage at quarterback. And I do think that that was, I don't know if it was the only deciding factor, but to me, it was the biggest deciding factor in this game was Dante Moore and Drew Aller. And Dante Moore has started only a handful of games.
Not a psychopath. Pete Carroll?
Oh, Pete's a psycho.
Yeah, he's just a pretty psychopath.
He's
polished.
He's Christian Bale American psycho.
Ah.
Running around chomping on that gum. Are you kidding me? Dude, that dude's a psycho. 100% Pete's not normal.
Blip, 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 nope. Blip.
Not going to convince me of that.
I'm going to read some texts here.
And I like this one too. To me, Drew Aller is closer to Kenny Pickett than he is Justin Herbert. I would agree with that.
Well, but I think the point about Herbert is
shackled.
Look what happened once he got into the NFL.
Yeah.
And Drew Aller has that type of skill. Now you're right about accuracy.
Yeah.
And so maybe he's just inaccurate and he always will be, and that's it.
Yeah.
But I mean,
he's got junk mechanics. I also couldn't believe. I actually was laughing. When they came out in the second half, they ran some read option stuff with Drew Aller, and I was like, so you went into the halftime, and your big idea was they had 69 yards of offense in the first half, I think it was, and Oregon's defensive line was just mushing them. And I said, dude, this game is over because if you go into the half and say, You know, boys, you know what we need to do right now? Have Drew Aller run the ball, because that ought to get him. And yet, what ended up being Penn State's, one of Penn State's biggest things for that fourth quarter comeback, somehow, watching him run was like watching Joe Flacco run. And yet, it was kind of effective. He was picking up first downs with his legs, and I was like, oh my God.
They'd make first contact after one or two, and then he'd lean forward for six.
I was like, how is this happening? He said, it was just like, I am Groot, and just found a way to slowly morph his way forward for first downs. And that's where I'll give him credit, man. He found ways to keep him in that game, and he made some big throws. The first touchdown throw was a big time throw. I mean, that's money right there. And when you absolutely had to have it. A
couple of other texts. When Penn State tied it in regulation, I thought Penn State should have gone for two.
100%.
And ended the game in regulation with the momentum that they had. And
I always feel that.
And Oregon, wait. Oh, and Oregon's getting 5 yards in Oregon's gas defense. Yes. Thoughts?
Defense was getting cooked. I thought they were out of gas. All the momentum was there. You were going into your bag of tricks. You were red hot. Yeah. And this is just always my sense when I get into overtime. If I, and it's hard for coaches because maybe they won't admit this. If I am the lesser team and Penn State's the lesser team, they just are. Oregon's better than Penn State. If I'm the lesser team and I've got them on the ropes, it behooves me to end the game on one play. I feel like the longer you extend games, the better team, the cream rises to the top. And I just was like, if I was Penn State there, I would have been like, dude, we are lucky to be here right now. I got one play with all the momentum on my side in a defense that doesn't think they can stop us right now. No, dude, we're ending this right now.
I even thought Lanning might go for two on Oregon's first possession there. But then, as people pointed out online, I think Jeff Schwartz had this, that now with you going first this second time, you've gotten your defense a little extra rest, and that might be the difference of why you come out there.
I also love, too, that Dan Lanning has never met a fourth down that he doesn't like.
Early and often, man. He went for it like seven times.
Well, and I think Will Stein called.
They were 5 of 7, weren't they?
Yeah. You see this a lot in the NFL where it's 3rd and 6, 3rd and 7. And NFL teams don't try to get 7. And Philly does this better than anyone. It's like, no, dude, we're fine getting 4. And we'll make it 4th and 2. And I think it really does change the dynamic of your play call. And I think Will Stein really thrives and does a great job of knowing that when it's 3rd and 7 and you're anywhere near midfield, and I mean either way, like if you're on your own 40 and you know that it's 4th and 1, 4th and 2, we're going. And I think it really, one, it creates problems for defenses. I think it's demoralizing for defenses. And I think it really opens up your play caller to not have to feel like every 3rd and 7, I have to get 8 yards. I love it.
Teams combined 8 of 10 on 4th down.
Yeah.
Oregon 5 of 7. Yeah. The person I was, a couple of people I was watching the game with, we were at Langdon because we'd played golf. And that place was nuts.
Oh yeah,
for the game. So I would imagine every place, wherever you were, if there was a television, people were stopping down. Like there was a wedding out there.
Yeah.
And most of the people were in the clubhouse watching Oregon Penn State finish up. And the person I was with said, when they didn't go for two, because we were all talking about that, it's like, well, they should go for two.
Yeah.
Oregon looks gassed. And he said, well, that's probably why James Franklin's 4-20 against top 10 teams. And I said, you know what, sir? Touche.
Hey, but you know, they scored in overtime and you were like, man, and then Oregon just had their responses. And I just didn't like the idea that in a condensed field, again, going back to it, I was going to put Drew Aller against Dante Moore. When that thing went to overtime, as white knuckled as that was, I just kind of sat there and I was like, Oregon will win this game. I turned to who I was sitting next to and just turned and was like, dude, Oregon will win. And they're like, how? And I'm like, a mistake will be made. I just felt like there was a Drew Aller mistake coming, and I felt like Dante Moore wasn't going to make that. There was one play, and I think it was Gary Bryant Jr., and he deserves an attaboy, and no one will talk about it.
He had an incredible game.
Dante Moore was going to throw a pick, and it was like on a little like 7-yard sit-down route, and Moore got some pressure, and Penn State did a nice job of heating him up at times, and he threw one of these little Mahomes sidearm passes, and it was about 2 yards to the left, and the Penn State DB number 7 was sitting there, and he had his arms out coming to him, and Gary Bryant Jr. literally reaches across his body and freaking picks that thing out of midair and brings it in. And it's a meaningless catch.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, whatever. It was a handful of yards. That was a pick going the other way. Little plays like that. That's what it takes to go into hostile environments and beat good teams. And Oregon just made a lot of those little kind of teeny plays along the way. And for whatever reason, Penn State just doesn't make those plays.
All right, we'll wrap up Oregon-Penn State. Coming up next, we will get to StackWatch.
Ooh.
And then in the news. That's our plan next hour. Be here with us, won't you? This is 105.1 The Fam.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.